Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Like no American election in a long time, this year's U.S. race for the White House is making headlines around the world. In Europe, primary results are page one news, and the stories of Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John McCain are studied with fascination for clues to the future of a relationship that has been in hard times. For Europe and the U.S., this year really matters. This hour, On Point, we'll talk with top European thinkers about the stakes this year for Europe, the U.S., and the world in America's presidential elections. We'll go to a great panel in just a moment, but first we go to Washington for an update on President Bush's trip this week to Europe. Joining me now is Dmitry Sevastopolo, Pentagon and defense correspondent for the Financial Times. Dmitry, thanks very much for being with us.
Sure, Tom.
This is being called in the headlines a farewell tour for George Bush to Europe. Tell us what his agenda looks like in the week ahead.
Well, it's his last NATO summit meeting before he leaves office, obviously, in January 2009. And essentially, there are two key items on the agenda. The first is Afghanistan, and the U.S. is trying to get NATO allies to boost their troop presence in Afghanistan to try and pick up some of the slack and save the U.S. from having to send more troops itself. And then second of all, there is going to be a debate about whether Ukraine and Georgia are given what's called member access plans, which is essentially starting the process for them to be the formal process for them to become members of NATO. And they're the two issues that he will discuss with his other counterparts.
Dmitry, presidents don't like to go begging for troops or anything else unless they have a deal already in hand. But is it clear that Europe will step up and send more troops to Afghanistan, where American generals have said we've got to have more NATO forces?
Well, in this case, there's some good news for President Bush in that the French President Sarkozy has already said that he will send some more troops to Afghanistan. But it's only roughly, I think, about 1,000, and the U.S. needs to see a lot more. So President Bush is going there. I wouldn't say he's begging because there are obviously other issues on the agenda, but U.S. leaders, Robert Gates, the Defense Secretary, Condoleezza Rice, the Secretary of State, have been going to Europe now for a couple of years and pleading with European members of NATO to step up to the plate and send more troops. And aside from the French, they've had very little success.
And on Ukraine and Georgia coming into NATO or coming closer to it, is it clear where that stands? Is Bush going to push adamantly for that? Is Russia ever going to countenance that? Does it have to?
No, Russia doesn't have to countenance it. It's not a member of NATO. It doesn't have, obviously, then a veto power. It's not entirely clear where the U.S. stands at the moment. There's going to be a debate at the summit. There are some European leaders who are afraid that by allowing Ukraine and Georgia to take this important step, and remember, it would still be several years away from becoming a member in each case, but it's an important step nonetheless. They're concerned that this would antagonize Russia even more and complicate the relationship both between the U.S. and Russia, but also between Europe and Russia, which has become very strained in the last year and a half or so as President Putin has delivered a lot of strong rhetorical attacks on the West.
And finally, Dmitry, speaking of strain, American relations with Europe have not exactly been rosy for much of the period of George Bush's time in office. Is there a sense, any chance at all, that he can make a significant change in that on this trip and in the months ahead of his presidency, or is Europe really waiting for the next U.S. president now?
I do think there's an element of Europe that's waiting for the next president. But on the other hand, if you look what President Sarkozy has done, you would have to say that the U.S.-French relationship, particularly in the military sphere, has improved dramatically since Sarkozy was elected. At the same time, you have Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, has withdrawn some troops from Iraq, and that relationship doesn't look quite as strong as it did, let's say, a year ago. So I think there's some improvement, but basically European governments are reluctant to send more troops to Afghanistan. The populations do not really support the mission, and they feel that this is not something they should be doing.
Dmitry Sevastopolo is Pentagon and defense correspondent for the Financial Times. Spoke with us from Washington. Dmitry, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. Pleasure.
We have a kind of European A-team with us today to look at how Europe sees the U.S. election campaign season that is we are deeply in the midst of right now. Let me introduce them. With us from New York is Joschka Fischer, foreign minister and vice chancellor of Germany from 1998 to 2005. Today, he runs a political consulting firm and sits on the board of the International Crisis Group. Minister Fischer, thank you very much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure, Tom.
from Paris. We are joined by Dominique Moisy. He's founder of the French Institute of International Relations and author of the forthcoming book, The Geopolitics of Emotion, How Cultures of Fear, Humiliation, and Hope Are Reshaping the World. Dominique Moisy in Paris, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
And from Oxford, England, we're joined by Timothy Garton Ash. He is professor of European Studies at Oxford University and has for years been a major interpreter of Europe and the world. He's author of Free World, America, Europe, and the Surprising Future of the West. Timothy Garton Ash, wonderful to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be with you.
If I may come first to you, Timothy, you've written just recently saying that American presidential elections have become like the political equivalent of the soccer World Cup. Why? Because it's the hyperpower? Because of this trio of people? Because of American media around the world? Why like the World Cup?
Because of all of that. It's not just an American election. I think many people in Europe feel it's more our election than it's your election. You can strike up a conversation about this in any bar or cafe anywhere in Europe. And I think it's obviously the importance of the United States. It's the globalization of the media so that we can watch it 24/7 in real time. It is the huge desire to have what you might call ABB, anything but Bush. And on top of that, there is Obama mania. I mean, far more than any of the other candidates, there is this absolute fascination and almost a kind of rekindling in some ways of the hopes that Europeans had of the United States in the early 1960s, in the Kennedy years. Of course, those hopes will be much more difficult to realize this time. But yes, we are all living your election.
Joschka Fischer, you were foreign minister of Germany. Bernard Kouchner, the foreign minister of France now, and generally a big supporter of the United States, was quoted this weekend prominently in the American press, recently observing that President Bush has led America's reputation into a place so sour that it will be hard to restore the luster to it. Maureen Dowd was saying in the New York Times, she quotes him saying about the United States, that Bernard Kouchner saying, "I think the magic is over." Joschka Fischer, do you agree? We've seen the opinion polls on American standing in the world. Can a new president restore the magic, whatever that was, to the U.S. reputation in the world, in Europe?
I don't believe that the magic is over. Of course, the Bush years were devastating for the standing of the United States and the West and the world. But take, for example, and I think this is one of the reasons for the Obama mania, as Timothy called it. I think if Obama, for example, would be elected as president, you would see that the magic will return immediately in election night, and America would give, I think, a very powerful message to the world, not only to the Europeans, that even in the midst of a very severe crisis, the U.S. Can reinvent herself. I think the magic relies mostly on the capability of the United States to reinvent herself and to lead. And I don't see that this is over. And if it would be over, I don't see another leadership. So I don't see that we will have then a Chinese or European leadership. We will have no leadership. And this is a very grim perspective.
Dominique Moisy, there's so much we wanted to ask about here, but let's go to this Obama mania first of all, because Timothy Garton Ash and Joschka Fischer both mentioned it right away. We will have listeners who are strong supporters of John McCain, who are strong supporters of Hillary Clinton and of Barack Obama. Is it, from Europe's perspective, is it really as simple as Obama mania may be the solution to this troubled relationship? Elect Obama and the magic is back globally, Mr. Moisy?
No, it's much more complex than that. But there is a feeling in Europe, as well as in many parts of America, that the dual challenges which the United States are facing today are quite simple. You have to reconcile American with themselves, and you have to reconcile America with the world. And for these two challenges, Obama seems ideally placed. And I disagree strongly with my own foreign minister. In fact, I was present when he said, to my surprise, that the magic of the United States was over. In fact, our passion, as we are watching those elections, are a denial of that. We wouldn't be so passionate if the magic of the United States was not there for us to be restored. In fact, there are a lot of Europeans who still dream of America as a model, and who were totally disillusioned, of course, with the last 8 years of the Bush administration. They want that magic to be returned, but they know also that things will never be the same, because when Bush was elected president of the United States, America was, so to speak, alone in the world, the hyperpower, to quote Hubert Védrine. Today, America is no longer alone. She has to share, if not in terms of power, at least in terms of influence, with countries like China, Russia, or even India.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Europe and the U.S. presidential campaign. Europeans are watching very closely the choices that we are making in this long race for the White House. We have a tremendous panel with us today. The former foreign minister of Germany, Joschka Fischer, joins us today from New York. He was vice chancellor and foreign minister of Germany from 1998 to 2005. From Paris, Dominique Moisy is with us. He's founder of the French Institute for International Relations, a big voice on Europe and American relations. And from Oxford, England, Timothy Garton-Ash, author of Free World, professor at Oxford University and a big interpreter of the continent, of his country, and world relations with ours, the United States. Timothy Garton-Ash, I wish you'd speak to this moment. You'd describe the intense interest in this campaign. We see the headlines that show up in European newspapers all over the place. But how do you see what is at stake here? What's been perhaps lost in the last 7 or 8 years, and what might actually be regained given what happens in November this year in U.S. polling places?
Well, I think, as Dominique started to say, it is an extraordinary historic moment, because we are clearly moving into a new multipolarity in which great rising powers like China and India, not to mention others like, say, Brazil or South Africa, will play an important part. And, of course, Europe, the European Union, with a GDP the size of the United States, is much more than it was 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. And I think we have next year really a historic chance to relaunch a strategic partnership between the United States and the European Union in a period when it's no longer so evident that the West can dictate the agenda, set the terms of world politics. So I do think it's very important, and I know that both Joschka and Dominique and I are involved in this, that Europe says to the United States, look, this is what we can do, not just in Afghanistan, but in relations with Russia, in relations with Iran, in the response to climate change, on the issue of energy security, on trade negotiations. In other words, it needs both. It needs a United States that is ready to listen as well as to speak, to be a partner, to practice even a little of that humility which George W. Bush famously talked about 7 years ago in his inauguration, that it also needs a Europe which is ready to put its money and indeed its soldiers where its mouth is to step up to the plate. Mm.
Minister Fischer, Joschka Fischer, we'll look at the individual candidates, but I wish you'd speak once more, if you would, to the sort of the big picture before we go there, about how you see what may have been lost in these recent years and what can realistically be regained, or the stakes in this election for Europe and the U.S. strategically, culturally, how do you see it?
Well, I think neither U.S. nor Europe are in a good shape on the foreign policy stage. The Europeans are still disunited after the disaster of the Constitutional Treaty. Now they made a step forward. Hopefully we will get another form of this Constitutional Treaty next year, ratified.
And you're looking at the European Union Constitution there.
Yeah, because we need streamlined institutions and more powerful institutions in an enlarged union. Mm-hmm. We have now 27 member states after the last enlargement round. And in the U.S., I mean, it's a disaster of the Bush policy. It's a disaster of unilateralism. And I think we should work together, as Timothy said, next year, to restore a certain form of West, I wouldn't say leadership, but the U.S. Will remain as the most powerful nation, and I think this offers an opportunity. But from my point of view, the next administration will have a very, very challenging agenda in the first 4 years. They have to deal with a very severe financial and economic crisis. I think going closer to November, this will be the dominant issue in the elections. The situation in the Middle East isn't fixed. Iraq, Iran, the Gulf, and the developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan, and they need a common effort. How will we react to the emerging powers, China? We see now the problems with China in Tibet, and I think we'll face more of these problems. And Russia, how we'll deal with Russia, this is a big issue. I think to open now the accession for Ukraine and Georgia, it's premature, it's not well prepared. On the other side, we should never should allow Russia to have a veto power. And the global challenges, which must be addressed together at the top, climate change. So this is the agenda, and whether leadership can be restored in these new global environment or not, this will be decided in the American elections, but also whether the European leaders are prepared to join forces with the new American administration.
The very preeminence of the West in question there. That's been a lot of centuries, and we hear the question mark that you leave hanging there. We have a lot of listeners who want to speak with the three of you. Let me begin to turn to them. Calling from Florence, South Carolina, we have Scott. Scott, you're on the air with Joschka Fischer, Dominic Moisy, Timothy Garton-Ash.
Thank you, Mr. Ashford. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of wondering what Obama may do differently. I'm just kind of skeptical about this Obama magic, Obama mania. I mean, exactly what will he do differently? Thank you for taking my call.
It's a good question. Apart from just being Barack Obama, Dominic Moisy, you know, Scott's skeptical. He sees a complicated world and says, what is it that you expect precisely? Or is it enough that he is this a marvelous kind of hybrid of American history and cultural roots? What exactly do you expect a President Obama might do that would be worthy of such mania, Dominic Moisy?
Well, first, what he is already the most important issue. People are looking at him with fascination because of his essence, with the conviction that the moment is smiling blackface would appear on the television screens all over the world, the soft power of the United States would be restored in a split second. Of course, after he will have to deliver or to disappoint very strongly. But there is the feeling that any of those three candidates, and that may seem a total contradiction with what I've just been saying, will be a radical change compared to Bush, that the three candidates, be they McCain, Hillary Clinton, or Barack Obama, are more willing to listen to Europe seriously, intensely, than the first Bush and even the second Bush administration. And here I would add to what Joschka and Timothy Garton-Ash have said already, the challenge for the United States is a huge challenge for Europe. The more America is going to be willing to listen to Europe, the more Europe will have something to say in common, and something that goes beyond words and reaches deeds. And from that standpoint, the next president of the United States should constitute a turning point for Europe. Are we serious about our intentions to exist as a world power or not?
Big questions here. Timothy Garton Ash, let me put that perspective to you. You hear our listener saying, you know, what exactly would Obama do? And Dominique Moisy saying, just the sight of Obama's face on television screens around the world would in a split second restore American soft power, cultural power in the world. Do you agree? I mean, Americans also are very aware of the significance, the weight of his racial story and background. But is it that potent globally? Is it that potent in Europe?
Yes, it is. He has already demonstrated the soft power of the United States, which is defined, as you know, as above all the power to attract. He is a hugely attractive figure around the world because he personifies in his in himself and in his extraordinarily diverse extended family, which goes all over the place, you know, Indonesia, Britain, you name it. He personifies not just the United States of today, but a globalized world. His problem is precisely that he is so attractive and so popular, and therefore there will be extraordinary expectations which are bound to be disappointed. And I think Scott is absolutely right to ask, what can he do, particularly when the United States is so relatively strapped for cash? I mean, you do not have the extraordinary economic power that you had when John F. Kennedy became president, and there are many other powers and forces in the world. So what he has to do is not Kennedy's bear any burden, pay any price, the leader of the free world. Those times have gone. What he has to do is to find a new language of global partnership in which the United States is, so to speak, first among equals and thinking about itself as first among equals, but always saying to Europe, to India, to others, so what can you do, what can we do together? And I actually think the trick for Obama will be to find that different language.
Joschka Fischer, let me ask you, I can imagine a lot of listeners thinking, well, of course, Europe is more politically liberal than the United States. Barack Obama is relatively and proudly a liberal candidate in this election. Of course, a panel of Europeans would find him appealing. What about the others? John McCain, for example, just last week saying in a big speech on foreign policy that it is time to return to our own Declaration of Independence, call for America showing a decent respect to the opinions of mankind, saying that the time for unilateralism is over. John McCain said, we cannot build an enduring peace based on freedom by ourselves, and we do not want to. Could McCain turn these relations, Joschka Fischer? Does it have to be Obama or Clinton, for that matter?
Well, we don't know what the outcome of the elections will be, but I agree with Dominique Moisy, who said that any new president will be a huge change in the relations of the United States to the rest of the world. And listening very carefully to the speech of John McCain last week, I think Dominique is right. If Obama will be elected, there will be some sort of magic and a tremendous risk, of course, that then he has to deliver. Obama represents restoration of American soft power, as it was said, but also of the American dream. And this would have, I think, tremendous positive repercussions in the relations between the U.S. and the rest of the world. But in the substance, the difference between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama is not very important. I don't see it. And even John McCain, who knows Europe very well, I think, will be a dramatic change. We will see that multilateralism will be restored. America will pursue a policy listening to others. But for the Europeans, anyhow, it will mean that the Europeans then had to demonstrate whether they are grown up or not, whether they are give only lip services or whether they are ready to deliver. And there I must say Afghanistan will be, I think, a key point. I'm not very satisfied with the position of my own government that they are so hesitant to send troops into the south. It's not very popular, but this means you must produce leadership? And this will be the question, I think, which will be put on the table, not now, this week in Bucharest on the NATO summit, but after the American elections.
Let's take a call from Iowa City, Iowa. Troy, you're on the air.
What will Europe do when Cato starts blowing up their buildings? Will they break? Will they crack down on the Muslims, or will they just let their citizens die and get blown up?
And Troy, with that, are you saying what? Europe is too soft? Europe hasn't stepped up enough? Is that what you're getting at?
Well, my question is I think the United States has somewhat been attacked by them. Well, and Europe is sitting back and saying, hey, it's your problem.
Troy,
what happens when they start dying?
Troy, let us pick it up. Dominique Moisy, how about it? Has Europe been a free rider during this period of terrorist threat? You hear Troy's question.
Ask the people from Madrid. Ask the people from London. I think we were a target of terrorism as well. Not of the magnitude of New Yorkers, but hundreds, and more than 200 in Madrid, nearly 100 in London. I mean, we were not watching passively. We were targeted by terrorists as well. And I think we are the continent where, on the exact aftermath of 9/11, there was a long headline in the front page of the top French newspaper Le Monde saying we are all New Yorkers. And of course, there was a divide, not as to the importance of terrorism as a threat, but as the best ways to fight terrorism. The Europeans started very on to say you have to fight terrorists, but you have also to fight the causes of terrorism, the roots of terrorism. And in fact, Bush in the second administration has taken on that European approach. So I think this question was a bit unfair in its presentation.
And yet, I read an essay of yours recently where you say the issue of burden sharing is real and that Europe's not necessarily ready to pick up its share of a shared burden.
That is absolutely true. There is, I believe, but that's part of the European contradictions, a debate in Europe. What do we want first? To see America restored as a model for the world, even at the cost of having to do a greater burden sharing? Or do we still dream of America as the protector? America doing the hard work when we can still be, let's say, the cleaning lady. America coming from Mars and Europe coming from Venus. I think that debate is still somewhat present in Europe.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Europe and the U.S. presidential campaign this hour. Europe watching very closely the choices that we Americans are making for the White House. Timothy Garton-Ash joins us from Oxford, England, author of Free World. Dominique Moisy from Paris, author of The Geopolitics of Emotion, and from New York, the former foreign minister and vice chancellor of Germany, Joschka Fischer, is with us, author of The Red-Green Years. He's now on the board of the International Crisis Group. We have a lot of callers. Linda, in Beverly, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, and thank you also for the opportunity to hear the views of Europe about our election. I share their mania for Obama. I am unabashedly a declared supporter and have waved his signs in my little village.
Okay, good.
But the issue...
Everybody should wave their sign, whatever it is. What do you think, Linda?
Clearly waved it high so that, you know, the citizens in my little village would see that. But the issue I wish to address has already been, addressed very well by your guests. And I think I've learned so much about their views. And I am a listener who also follows the European elections because I think they're also significant to the United States.
Linda, do you think these elections can put the United States back in a better global driver's seat with Europe?
Well, I share their hope and that the opportunity, there is the possibility of great change with Obama. We just don't know. He has got very severe, all of them have very severe issues to address.
Linda, thank you very much for your call. We've got it. Let me get another right here from Potsdam, New York. AJ, you're on the air.
Good day, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
It's encouraging to hear your international guests speak, because I infer from what they are saying that there is hope and indeed some expectation that the next president could indeed begin the long road to repairing the reputation and place of the United States in the community of nations. And after all, it is a community of nations, which it, well...
Give us a question here, AJ, if you've got one. I'm desperate for a question.
My question is, do they think that this is a reasonable expectation that we can indeed rejoin the community of nations as equals, rather than as one who has, to use the vernacular, dissed the rest of the world for the last 8 years?
Okay, we'll go right to it. Joschka Fischer, is the door still open? Are the offenses, if that's what they were, are the wounds too great? Is the door open for the United States?
Definitely. I don't see there a serious problem in the way that the door would be closed, of course. I mean, with a new president and a new policy and the major issues, behavior, I think it will be restored immediately. Of course, he will have the usual suspects of anti-Americanism, but I think everybody around the world is very hopeful that American elections will produce an outcome where American leadership could be restored in a trustful way. Of course, the issues in Iraq, Afghanistan, in the Gulf, Iran, and the whole of the Middle East, I think, are very severe, and the next administration will have to deliver, and the Europeans will be questioned what can be their contribution.
Timothy Garton-Ash, there can be such a change. I'm looking here, though, at The Economist magazine out of your country, and their big headline this week is, you know, asks, is everything going to change with a new president? And they say no. They say so many of the world's circumstances are so difficult, so intractable. The Americans did, after all, elect and re-elect George Bush. It's not as though they don't have an interest in the positions that he put out there for a long time. I mean, do you see the real possibility for change, or will we have a period maybe of making nice, but circumstances, Iraq, Iran, Sudan, you name it, they're real, they're hard to solve?
I think that the opportunity is there, the chance is there. I mean, by the way, the United States never left the community of nations, but it did give itself rather a bad name in the last few years, and I think one of the things you will see, if it is Obama or Hillary, I think it's more questionable if it's John McCain, is how much of the stick, of the criticism that the United States has gotten the last few years was actually the dreaded anti-Americanism, and how much of it was just anti-Bushism shared by many Americans. And my view is at least half of it was anti-Bushism, not anti-Americanism. So definitely the door is open. I don't know how long the door is going to be open for. I mean, I think what the three of us have all been saying is there is this great moment of opportunity in 2009 when you have a new president, and actually we'll have a new set of presidents in the European Union, but we have to seize that opportunity. Overwhelmingly, we have common interests in the world. On 9 out of 10 issues, we have essentially common interests and common values across the Atlantic. You have never had a set of European leaders who are more Atlanticist with the great change in Paris, the arrival of Nicolas Sarkozy, but also with the new government in Germany. So you have a very favorable constellation. But if we don't seize that chance next year in 2009, then we could blow it again, and then it could get very bad-tempered.
And is this an epical moment in that regard, Timothy, where someone earlier in the conversation was, I thought I heard, suggesting that the very influence of the West may be in question here?
Exactly so. This is precisely what I've argued in my book, Free World, that we are in the last decade or couple of decades where the West will clearly be in the position to set the agenda of world politics, as it has done arguably at least for the last 200 years, if not longer, because of the power of China, the rise of India, the position of Russia and other powers and other forces in world politics, like big corporations and NGOs and, you know, the great challenges of poverty and climate change and so on, so that if we blow it again this time and don't get another chance for, say you have a two-term president, say we don't get another chance for another 8 years, our possibilities to shape the future of the world will be correspondingly less. So I really do think this is a historic moment, and it behoves us both, Americans and Europeans, to seize that moment.
Let's go to Hampton, New Hampshire, and a call from Dominic. Dominic, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like a brief question from your guests, if they could tell us what they think we should do in Iraq, whether we should stay or go. I'd like their opinions.
Joschka Fischer.
I think you must prepare a withdrawal, but this must be prepared in the region. You cannot go without doing any preparation. And there, I think it's very important that a certain form of consensus in Iraq, but even more important in the region, will be reached before America can disengage in Iraq. But at the end, you must disengage. I don't see that there is an option to succeed. I think it was a historical mistake after 9/11 by President Bush to wage war in Iraq. This was a self-defeating strategic mistake.
Dominique Moisy, can Europe help the United States get out of Iraq without the region, the Middle East, melting down?
Well, my country, France, is not going to engage in Iraq, but we are sending more troops back to Afghanistan, so we are playing a role regionally. I think I agree with Joschka Fischer. Basically, by the end of the day, America will have to disengage from Iraq. There's no other solution. But it must be a slow disengagement, one that is negotiated with Iraq's neighbor, and one in particular that probably presupposes the reopening of a dialogue with countries like Iran in particular. So Europe can help America diplomatically, and Europe can help America militarily, strategically, in alleviating the burden in a country like Afghanistan.
But how much can Europe help diplomatically? We've all watched Iran and word on its alleged nuclear program. Europe seems to have been very involved in those conversations, and yet it seems Iran inexorably moves ahead on the nuclear front. So some Americans, you know, I think, really scratch their head about just how much diplomatic throwaway Europe has, Mr. Moisy.
That is true. In fact, so far, neither the first policy of the Bush administration of no dialogue with Iran, nor the European policy of getting together on a dialogue really worked. I mean, it was a success for Europe because we were able to come with a common position. But was it a success with regard to progress with Iran? This is much more in doubt. But we still have to go on. I mean, Ahmadinejad is not going to be the president of Iran forever. There is hope beyond him, which will come at some point, and we should be ready to exploit those opportunities when they occur.
Let's go to Alex in Bedford, Massachusetts. Alex, you're on the air.
Greetings, Tom, and
hi
to all your panel,
and
a wonderful, astute bunch. What I'd like to say is, and what I think is really important, regardless of who gets into the office, and I happen to be an Obama supporter, is that they will only succeed to the extent to which they serve the will of the people of the United States. And the Bush administration has not done that. This system is cracked.
Well, Alex, so you say, but President Bush came into office after an election and was reelected. I mean, he's low in the polls now, but who's to say he's
well,
not?
I have to, I do have to say, Tom, that it's questionable how George Bush got into office, and, you know, I know that that's a...
First-time debate, second-time reelected straight up.
Well, you know, it would seem. On the other hand, it's not clear exactly who voted for them and to what extent they're kind of asleep at the switch, but there are certainly a lot of people in the United States who are in terrible disagreement with all of what George has done. And basically, in other words, we have a lot of special interests which control a lot of our known world at this time. If we do not break that hold, then the will of the people will not be done. So regardless of who gets in, you know, that person is going to be successful, and it would be helpful if Europeans may not have a lot of diplomatic or governmental power here, but people have power everywhere. We the people, we the species, need to speak to American leadership, whoever they may be, and put the pressure on the leadership to obey the will of the people of the world. Because after all, the president is now a global, you know, power. Whoever becomes the president is a global power.
Well, yes and no. And, of course, ultimately responsible constitutionally to Americans. But let us look at it. Timothy Garton Ash, what about the bipolarity in the American electorate itself? Our caller Alex says, you know, help us get somebody in there who follows the American people, but the American people have a lot of different views on the world, and not all of them line up at all with what may be a predominant European view of the world. Is that an ongoing issue, problem, regardless of who takes the White House this fall?
Well, in a way, that's a question for Americans, but what is clearly the case is that what Obama is trying to do, and actually McCain to some extent too, is to take the United States beyond what one might call the bipolar disorder of red America versus blue America, divided nation, and so on. So both of them are at least making that promise, and in some ways, I mean, after all, McCain is actually much more liberal, small L on social issues, dare I say it.
Many American conservatives have said that.
No, that, as one of the religious right has noticed, you know, and Obama has some traditional values in him too. So one would hope that that would be diminished, but I don't think, you know, that our position is of making a series of demands of the United States. I think Europe does much too much of that. Europeans are the world experts at telling the United States everything it's doing wrong. We have a lot of power ourselves. We could step up the pressure on Iran. And actually, to go to one of your earlier callers, the front line of the long-term struggle against jihadist terrorism is not just in Iraq. It's in Afghanistan, it's in Pakistan, it's in Saudi Arabia, and it's in Europe. It's in the back streets of the great European cities. And we are actually waging that struggle by a combination of toughness in intelligence and police action, but also in persuading people, wooing away those angry young men who might become terrorists or might become good citizens of our countries. So we're actually there at the front line fighting that struggle, and I think that that is a burden sharing of a kind that may not be properly recognized in the United States.
Joschka Fischer, Dominique Moisy wrote recently that the best America for Europe and the world is a confident America, an America that sheds its culture of fear and rediscovers the roots of its culture of hope. Minister Fischer, do you see that happening? You're sitting in New York right now. You're watching the United States. Do you see that cultural shift, if it's there to be had, in this country, the United States?
Well, I think it's very important in our relationship between the U.S. and Europe we must understand also our differences. I mean, the cultural differences, the historical differences, even the political differences. But these are differences, as you can usually find it, in families. This is very important to understand. So we have common roots and common values and a lot of common interests. But it wouldn't be wise for an American president to take over European positions, as it wouldn't be wise for European leaders to take over American positions because of the differences. But I think what will be very important is that we change the style on both sides of the Atlantic, listening to each other, to discuss the issues before decisions will be made, But then, and I say that to the European side, common responsibility and common decision-making means also common burden-sharing. And there I think the American side has a good case, and Europe must prepare that with a new administration, I think the active role of Europe must be a more important one, and it will be a heavier burden which Europe has to shoulder.
Something to prepare for right there. Joschka Fischer, former foreign minister of Germany, it's been wonderful having you with us today. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Timothy Garton-Ash in Oxford, England, thank you for being here.
It was a pleasure.
And Dominique Moisy in Paris, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.